Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history, and will pass that history on to all eternity. But they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe, Ashe, Asheo.
It sounds like you're tired of not being heard. If so, follow Black Sister Talk on Instagram and send us a DM with...
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Hotel family, this is your brother, Kwasi Kraft. Kawatu, meaning your warrior for the people. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the raping of the black man's masculinity. I have a special guest, Baba Anthony Courtney. He'll be on shortly. But before we get into that, we're going to do an ancestral profile. And the ancestral profile is going to be on Jack Johnson, born as John Arthur Johnson. Now, he was born in Galveston, Texas in 1878. In 1908, he became the first heavyweight African American champion to win the world heavyweight boxing crown. And when he knocked out the reigning champion, Tommy Burns. Now, the fast living, Johnson held on to the title until 1915 and continued to box until he was 50. Now, he died in an automobile accident in Raleigh, North Carolina in 1946. Now, Johnson was also the son of ex-slaves, and he was the third of nine children, and possessed an air of confidence and drive to exceed beyond the hard, scrapled life of his parents, what they had known. And Johnson had made a name for himself in boxing, the black boxing circuit, because back then they did not allow white people to even spar. White people wouldn't even spar with black boxers, their counterparts, because they wasn't going to take the chance of being heard or anything like that by black people. And so he set his sights because Johnson had won the heavyweight title fighting the black circuit, but he wanted the world championship. So he set his sights on the world heavyweight title. And at that time, it was held by Jim Jeffries. And Jeffries refused to fight. And Jeffries wasn't alone. Like I said, white boxers would not even spar with their black counterparts. And finally, on 12-26 of 1908, the flamboyant Jack Johnson will often talk to his opponents as he then suddenly got a chance to fight for the heavyweight title. And he fought against a Tommy Burns. And Johnson, now, and he won that fight. That was a 14-round victory. They stopped it in the 14th round. As a matter of fact, the police jumped into the ring, stopped the fight. They weren't going to allow this white man to be humiliated and beat by Johnson like that. They just awarded Johnson the championship after that. Now, Johnson later outside in Sydney, Australia, he fought Burns, who had succeeded Jeffries as a champion, the only reason that Burns had agreed to fight because they offered him a guaranteed purse of $30,000. Now that lasted up until the 14th round of that fight when Johnson was named the winner. Now, Johnson later fought Jeffries July 4th, 1910, after 15 rounds, Johnson came away victorious, affirming his domain over boxing and further angering white boxing fans who hated seeing him beat white people. And he was, at the top of his game. Now, Jeffrey was humbled with the loss. And this is what Jeffrey said. Now, this is a quote. "I couldn't have hit him. No. I couldn't have reached him in 1,000 years. And that's what he said about Johnson. Now, Johnson earned $117,000 for that fight. He had fought 5 years. He continued to fight after that. And then he had lost to Jess Willard in the 26th round in Havana, Cuba. And he continued to fight Johnson after that for 12 more years before he hung up his gloves at the age of 50. Now, Jack Johnson, he really brutalized the white fighters when he fought them. And he also taunted them. And so something that you should be known is that a lot of times when he fought and he was victorious, there would be lynchings and there would be riots afterwards. And he knew that. So he made sure, and he would even hold up the fighters so that they wouldn't hit the ground so that he could continue to beat on them. And like I said, he taunted them. He would swing his arms all kind of ways, and then all of a sudden he hit them with the opposite arm, make faces at them, talk to them. I mean, he just did all kind of things and stuff. So they weren't real crazy about him. He was a very dominant, very confident person. He drove fancy cars. He dressed really nice. He dated white women. So despite all the Jim Crow laws and everything, and he dated white women. He actually married white women. Like I said, he drove fancy cars. He got in trouble because he took a white female over the state lines, and they had back then the Mann Act, which you couldn't take a white woman outside of the state lines and so forth. So he ended up going out of the country, but he was later placed and served some time in prison for that. And so, but he's done a number of different things. He had a nightclub. It was in Chicago. It was called Cafe de Champion. It was at 41 West 31st Street in Brownsville. And so that was really something for the black and African-American community and stuff to have that. Now, they said that, that community had about 120,000 people, in that area and stuff like that, but only 17 people were present. Now, that's what the Tribune said when they wrote about it. about Jack Johnson, about the numbers being there. But again, he was just a great fighter. And one of the things, like I said, he had immense confidence in himself. And so a lot of, he actually even went to talk to Joe Louis. And Joe Louis didn't really want to talk to him. Actually, his trainers didn't want to talk to him. And now they came up with some rules for boxing because, and when I say that, the rules were specifically for black boxers because Jack Johnson was a very confident person. He said what he wanted. He even got stopped for speeding on numerous times. And when he got stopped for speeding, he asked the officer how much for the speeding ticket and stuff. And the officer told him how much money. He gave him the money. And he doubled the money because he said, well, I'm going to come back and I'm going to keep driving fast. And he took off and he left. So like I said, despite so a lot of people didn't like him because, you know, despite all the racial inequities and things that were going on, Jack Johnson did what he wanted to do. And when I say that they came up with some rules, they did not want, white people did not want, because the heavyweight champion was looked upon as one of the most powerful people in the world. And for Johnson to hold that title and elevate the black people all over the world, the white people didn't like that. And so Joe Louis, when he came into the picture, and when they talked to him, they gave him some rules. And this came from his son. There was a special where his son spoke about Joe Louis and he about his dad. And he said they gave him some guidelines. And one of the rules was for, it was called an anti-Jack Johnson rules and guidelines for Joe Louis. And so what one thing that they said he should not, he shouldn't do is that if he ever when he beats someone, he should never smile. He should never smile when he defeats a white person, white opponent. He should never gloat over a white opponent, and he should never be seen with a white woman. And Jack Johnson married at least three white women, and he was seen with them all the time. So. Again, Jack Johnson pretty much did what he wanted to do. He died in 1946 in a car accident. So, but that's Jack Johnson. That's one of our all-time greats. And so he lived the way he wanted to live. So much respect. And so there was a difference, you know, whereas And when I was talking about Joe Louis, his son also said that even though they wanted Joe Louis to not be very flamboyant and all that kind of stuff, they said that was his personality. He came up in a Baptist church, and he was very humble and kind of shy kind of a person. And so that was his personality. But, you know, again, under the conditions in which Jack Johnson fought under, so that was something. And he's also called the Giant, the Brownsville Giant. So he was known for, and he was 6'2", like 204 pounds. You know, he had a record of 70 wins, I think 10 losses. 10 losses and 40 knockouts. I believe two draws, but that was Jack Johnson. All right, Bubba Courtney, how you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right. You know, tonight, one of the reasons I wanted to talk, you had posted something on social media. And I saw that, and it just took to me. And one of the things that I was, it took to me when you, it was about black men being raped during slavery and what effect that might have on us even today, because a lot of people don't want to talk about how that torment and so forth has just, that trauma has just been passed on from generation to generation. And I think about a lot of the things that's going on where we seem to have these different identity crises. in regards to what goes on and how we respond to each other and how we look at things. And so that really touched me. And I was, something had came on the news last week on TV where a person on TV, they were talking about, they were a non-binary, meaning that they didn't want to claim themselves to be a guy or a girl, and they were happy about that type of situation. And, you know, just thinking about it, with all these different terminologies in regards to how people can define themselves, you know, this is nothing new. The Romans, I mean, it's been going on forever. But, you know, the terminologies and the things that they're doing that seem to qualify this as being, this is a new me or how things should be, and just how kids are just being treated in school. You know, like they're telling them, you know, like a young man, he needs to change. He needs to behave in a different kind of way, you know. And that's troublesome. I'm not in the schools now, but, you know, I'm just thinking about, I mean, many a times I recall I didn't really have those. I had quite a few black teachers, and I just never had an issue in regards to them talking to me about my aggressiveness and that type of nature. But today, you know, it just seems to be pretty different, like they're on a different agenda. Your thoughts?
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
Oh, you said a lot there.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, the agenda seems to be, do they have some kind of path that they're going on that we need to look at things different in regards to how we bring our black men up? You know, in regards to, you know, we do this, we talk about manhood training and, you know, being boys, rites of passage. There's a lot of things that we do, and all of a sudden we're hearing different thoughts in regards to how we need to look at things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, to a great degree, media projects a lot of the things in terms of our community. And we do have to admit that some things that are going on in the community is not as it should be, okay? But what happened, it is up to us to, as men, to fix it. The men of each ethnic group that exists in America takes on the responsibility for their young men in terms of their development. And that is something that we will have to do collectively. You know, with small, maybe small groups to start with, we understand the handicap, things that have handicapped us in terms of our history of enslavement for hundreds of years. But, you know, is at some point in time, we still have to, the solution is we have to fix it. And oftentimes what we have to maybe do is look at things a little more creative and in terms of how we begin to address things and reassess, you know, what it is to be a black male in a society that we don't run, but we can run our communities, but oftentimes we have to look at running them a different way. Okay, so let me just start this way. What would you consider the thing that people is in America, and I'm not just going to just go talk about blacks, but let's add the other groups into it. What are the other things, what is the main thing that people are seeking in their lives? What is it that they want? What drives them? Now, what we see is that the thing that drives our people most, in most of the case because of the economic situation, the poverty exists, especially in our community, is money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's also what drives folks in other communities. Is money, all right? The question then becomes, since we're spending so much time trying to accumulate money, does the money, even when we get it, bring about the happiness that we desire? Is the money fixing our problem?
Right.
All right? So what kind of example do we set for the youth if the major focus in life is about the money, right?
Right.
When I was teaching high school, and this was back in the 90s, and I would teach at one of the alternative schools, and I would ask the young men, I was teaching at Lapham Park, it was middle school and a high school alternative school, and the school was 100 students, and 95 of them were young black men, okay, who were mostly involved in gang activity, were either gangsters, disciples, or vice lords, and some were not.
Right.
Some had been thrown out of the regular high school because they were incorrigible. They just wouldn't go for anything. They were challenging the teachers. And in terms of a lot of times, the things they were saying was correct. And oftentimes, the teachers didn't even know as much as the students, right, in terms of certain subjects. So when young men know something, they're going to challenge you. But one of the questions that I ask them, and I'm getting back to the point, is by your own definition of happiness, whatever you think it is, if you know five happy adults, raise your hand. Now, these young men were 16 to 19 years of age.
Oh, wow.
How many hands did I get? And I had 25 students per class. How many hands do you think I would get?
Wow.
Five happy adults.
I would think out of 25, you'd have at least maybe 10.
You're an optimist. I was lucky because I got one that said they happy adult. All right? All right, because what has happened, I said, okay, if you don't know five happy adults, who do you consider happy? Who do you think that they would name?
Wow.
I mean, you know, I think they would be looking at their parents and their siblings. Oh, you said five happy adults.
Right. In a lot of cases,
they didn't
look at their parents because what happened is we had such a high divorce rate. And it's continuously growing, right?
Yes.
So that was what happened. Sometimes you would think it might have been entertainer or athlete.
Right.
But that was also not the case. You know who they named? Grandparents.
No.
They've been together for a long time, especially grandma. Because grandma was in their lives, and the grandmas back in those days was a lot older than what some of the grandmothers are to now.
Right,
and the grandmothers
were
basically the glue that kept the family together.
Wow, that makes
I could relate to that because as I grew up, the grandmother was the titular head of the family, right?
Yeah.
He was the one where you knew where to be at certain times of year when they brought the family to gatherings together.
So
at Christmas, at Mother's Day, at Easter, at Thanksgiving, the first stop that the family would make, even if they went someplace later on, the adult was at grandmother's house, and they brought the children and their cousins came from the different families, and that was the glue that kept people together. Then the children could be with each other, and then after a while they would put us someplace back in another room, and the adults would get together and do their thing. Right?
Right.
So they saw that as a happy time. We saw that as a happy time because it's always a great time to see people's cousins and stuff. But that was
true
that we lived in close proximity. Now we find that today, a lot of time, a lot of the young people don't see their cousins years at a time because we moved in so many different places and are so spread out.
Right.
You see, so that happiness being the driving force within our lives and especially with our young people, there's a saying that goes, if the warriors, and I'm talking about especially the young men, if the Warriors do not feel the heat, they will burn down the village. And I think that what we recognize, what we have to recognize that that heat is the love that they receive along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So many of our youth out here nowadays are not receiving that love, and if you don't haven't received it, it's very hard for them to understand that they should give it. And so we see a lot of things that's going on now throughout our communities, all over the country and all over the world, with the killings and the domestic abuse and you name it. And a lot of these is taking place through the young men.
Right.
So I don't want to paint that. That's just the only thing, because there's a lot of positive things that's going on as well.
Right.
When we look at the media in terms of what they're projecting in terms of young black men, you can turn on the news almost every night in any city or town where there's a sizable amount of black people. And some of the first things that you're going to see on the news is going to be something negative in regards to us.
Right.
And I don't care where you go. I'm right now down here in Charlotte, North Carolina, the baseball game watching my grandson. But what takes place is that very simple. You know, it's a nice venue that's going on, but if I go back when I turn on the news tonight, they're going to show you certain parts of Charlotte, North Carolina that you're going to see the negative news about who shot who, who raped who, you know, drug busts, the whole thing. So media is pushing a large part of that negativity, and then other people who are not around us, they, a lot of times, if they don't have any interaction with us, then they buy into the media line.
Right. Most definitely. And, you know, I see that to be so true, because I remember when I worked in the suburbs, and there would be a lot of things that would happen in the community that were very troubling, and they were very similar to a lot of the things that happened in the black communities, but they wouldn't be broadcast on the news as something major or anything like that. It was just kind of swept under. They would talk about something that happened in Milwaukee, and then they would go to the suburb, and they were like, and very rarely do we think, but this is something, but I deal with making these type of arrests on a weekly basis. But again, I don't control that narrative in regards to how things are being reported. But that point is real. Oh, my goodness. I see that real clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that we have to recognize, too, is like I had an opportunity to go up to one of the colleges many years ago up in Platteville, Wisconsin. And they had established a number of students, like I think it was about 20 black students on the campus, and they had developed this the Black Student Union up there. And so they had asked me to come up and be the guest speaker. All right? And what I did is that I posed, as there's, I guess there was about 80 people there. So the dean came out, a number of white students that were supporting, you know, the black students that had formed their group. They was having a little dinner and stuff. And so when I, you know, gave the presentation, I asked the same question to the people there. And the question was, once again, by your own definition of happiness, if you know five happy adults, raise your hand. And this was to the whole audience. How many hands do you think I got out of that 80 people? And at least 60 of them were white, students, administrators.
Oh. Maybe none.
I got five hands, and they were adults. The white students did not raise their hand. Now, why do I see that happening in the driving force? So let's take a look at our youth. Our youth, especially our teenagers, and I know how critical they are, because when I was teaching school, they will say just about anything to you. A lot of times they're trying to get, you know, push a nerve or whatever. But what happens is this. they come to the conclusion, you know, and I ask the adults. We have to ask our adults today, by your own definition of happiness, how many of us as black adults or white adults know five happy people?
Mm.
So what happens if the youth don't see us happy? If
people don't see
you happy, is it likely they're going to pay attention to what you say?
Right.
They will come to the conclusion many times that maybe I don't know what to do, but I definitely know what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to listen to what you tell me because I don't see you as being happy nowhere. And so when we go to the Facebook or whatever other medias, we see continuous complaints among people that's not happy with their situation. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. You know, Baba Courtney, I don't want to change the subject a whole lot, but my first wife, before she passed away, she went to Platteville, and she was the queen of their ebony ball that they had. And that was back in 1981. And I think that's the first year that they had it. And so I was just wondering, the time that you were up there, because I know they had a lot of serious problems.
That's right.
Because I was up there, and they had some serious issues when I was just up there, just visiting.
Yep. Yep, it was definitely during that time. See, but what happened was, like, you even being a police officer, let's take, for instance, we know that with what takes place in terms of car theft, okay, and not only that, but the car theft now is all about, for the most part, the catalytic converters.
Right.
Right. Because the ingredients in the catalytic converters, and people can look this up on Google, the rhodium, and there's two other, the palladium, these things are worth thousands of dollars per gram. Okay? And what people don't know, so a lot of the young men, you know, a lot of people are having them to set up the battery converters. They might get $300 or $400 at max. But then when they drop the catalytic converters off, there's people, the chop shops or whatever, or people who have connections that know the real value of the minerals in the catalytic converter. And they really getting over big time. But if the focus is not on them, the focus is on the young people or older people who are still in the catalytic converter. Go to Google and look it up. Catalytic
converter. Wow, I did not know that. Wow.
And that's happening all over the country. So with people who are living in poverty conditions, then they are going to do whatever it takes in order to survive. Especially if the driving force is money. They're trying to pay their rent, or they're trying to buy some food, or whatever they're trying to do. So, and a lot of things in terms of a lot of the young men, when you've been programming a society that as a man you should be able to contribute or take care of your family, you know, and that's the agenda that's pushed. And if you can't do that, then many times you feel less than. So then you're going to find to go ahead and be able to contribute some kind of way because you don't want to be seen as less than.
And you know, that's...
So go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I mean, that's a common struggle that so many of us have, you know, in trying to identify ourselves as men. And people tell you, you know, if you don't have a good job, if you don't have a nice car, you know, or the clothes you wear sometimes. I mean, there's so many different standards that are thrown out there that affect us, especially as young people growing up. And this is why we really need to have someone pour into us, our parents and our grandparents, to set those examples. But when we don't have those examples and we fall apart like this, and because we're just in a society where, you know, I don't think they have any use for us anymore, you know, back in the days of slavery. I mean, you know, I think that our minds are more they have more control of our minds now than so they don't have to do the chains, the beatings, the whipping and so forth and this and that. I mean, we're doing a lot of this to ourselves, you know, so it's a tough deal.
Well, part of it we're doing to ourselves because we still trying to function out of the framework of defining ourselves by someone else's definition.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, as long as we do that, then we cannot make the changes. And then what has taken place, you see, there's a lot of changes that's taken place in America. You see, you know, I mean, with the recent thing that's taken place with the Roe versus Wade, you're going to see women.
Right.
Challenge that to death. A lot of these elected officials, that leak that came out is going to be monumental based on how a lot of women vote on who's going to be in office. Because now they're seeing that after all these years, the law that was passed that where they felt that they had the freedom to go ahead and make the decisions about their own body is now likely, based on the politics, may be taken away from them. And they responded immediately after that leak.
Mm.
All right? So what has happened is we see that happening all the time. You know, even though still they're concerned about that, but how many people is concerned about the John Lewis bill that protected our voting rights as black people? That hasn't passed
right.
yet. How about the George Floyd bill? That hasn't
right.
passed yet, all right? And so what happens is a lot of times, you know, people want our support in terms of what they're doing. I mean, the people with the LGBT, now they're afraid that their rights are going to be taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So all this has the domino effect. But, you know, one of the things as black people that I have to give our people credit for is we come to everybody's aid in terms of, but very seldom do other people come to our aid.
And I think we've been pretty much conditioned to do that, and I think that's one of the things when I was reading about, I think Malcolm X said it, and Bobby, Dr. Bobby Wright said it as well, that we will come to their aid quicker than we will come to that of ours, of our own needs. We'll put theirs ahead of ours.
Well, you know, basically, as I've looked at it over the years, and including even myself, you know, and most of the people that I know, is that we are probably the most loving people on the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
And we try to support everybody.
Mm.
All right? And this is not to say
yeah.
that some other people don't support us, but most other groups look to take care of their own.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And what happens is we try not only to take care of our own, but take care of other people too, because we recognize that in order to make the instrument or what we call the vision of America work is that we have to work together. And if we look
yeah.
at our leadership over the years, both black men and black women, that's continuously in our history of what we have tried to do. You know? So, you know, even our leaders who we might have considered like violent, like Malcolm X, no. He was saying all we got to do is the right thing by each other. That's all that's necessary. You know, so we're loving people, but now we just have to go ahead and create a different way of how we are going to function, and especially as men. So, you know, there's men who have been talking and trying to do things for many years, as well as women all over the country. But what takes place is that, give you a couple of examples of things that I see needs to happen now. As black men, we have to, when we look at our history, we have to look at where our influence is, okay? Our influence in our community historically has come from what comes out of our mouths,
mm-hmm.
all right? You know, we can get fired up when brothers get to speaking, is that right?
Yes.
Take the church, for instance. Give you an example. And I used to ask a lot of women, and I still do, and you might want to do this as well. Ask them, how many black churches would exist in America if black women weren't in them? How many you think it would be?
I think it would be, no, I know I probably, I just don't see it. I really don't.
It probably wouldn't be none.
Because
usually 80% of the churches are usually women and children. Is that right?
Yes.
But if you look, I would bet you that 95% of the black male, of the black churches have a black male pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right? Because what comes out of our mouth can either inspire positive or negative behavior as men. Okay, give you an example of that working. Because, yes, we carry the word, and one of the things that we have not recognized is that our women carry the power. All right? It's just like if you got a socket on the wall, that socket will sit there forever with all that power in it unless you plug something in it. Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, at the end of that plug is a drill, a saw, a vacuum cleaner, a microwave, whatever. Right? That socket is just like our women. Right? If we're saying, if we can say the right thing or the wrong thing, depending on what our agenda is, and we're going to get some women that's going to go along with it. Is that right? Even if it's negative.
Yeah.
All right? Definitely. Because they have their own things that they want to have come out of a situation, you know, and we oftentimes serves as a means by which they can get what it is that they wanted. You know what I'm saying? So then what takes place? Let me give you a perfect example, another one,
okay,
of how that continued. Then I'm going to take it all the way back to the continent.
Okay.
Take the Montgomery bus boycott that lasted just a little bit over a year. When you see the Eyes on the Prize series, you will see that E.D. Nixon, Fred Shuttlesworth were the men, businessmen, in Montgomery, Alabama, that was the financiers, well, they were the ones behind the bus boycott, okay?
Right.
Fred Gray was head of the NAACP. So you would see these continuous speeches. And then what they did, they brought in Dr. King, who at the time was 26 years old. And what took place was is that King, regardless of whether or not you agree with his philosophy of nonviolence, you still couldn't get past his oratory or his sincerity in terms of what he was saying. Is that right?
Yeah.
Because King would fire you up. You know what I'm saying? I was never a nonviolent person, and I know you never was. But at the same time, we recognize sincerity. We recognize the integrity of people.
Right.
We recognize the things that they were trying to get accomplished based on how they saw what needed to be done. And it was also based on where they were living at the time, down south, right? Because up north and down south was two different places in 63 or whatever. When I was watching TV in Chicago, is that we didn't know nothing about no nonviolence. It was hard for us to even conceive of what people was happening down there. We just couldn't see it. But over time, we began to understand that that was a tactic. All right? So that what took place was this. So the brothers was up there giving the word. After the word was given, if you look it up on Google, there's a sister named Joanne Robinson. I can't think of the other one right now. What they did.
Okay.
Is that Joanne Robinson was head of a women's organization down there. And they went and they printed up 40,000 flyers. I think there's a couple of movies out there now that's been out. I think, I know, trying to think of her name. She was, first level was in Waiting to Exhale. She was, I can't think of her. Head to Step Sister.
Angela Bassett?
Huh?
Angela Bassett?
No, not Angela Bassett. This was the other one. And she was also in the original Dreamgirls. She, I think she played the role as Jordan Robinson, and she worked at
this. I think I know who you're talking about. I just can't think of her name. I can see her face, but I can't think of the name.
Right. Right. And she played that role, and they worked at a college, and she went and got 40,000 mimeographed flyers about the boycott. Okay?
Right.
So what took place? Once those flyers... They decided to stop riding the bus. Okay? So what took place? I think then you might have seen another one that Whoopi Goldberg was in, another movie, where now white women had to come and pick up black women because they were not used to cleaning their house, washing their clothes,
right,
cooking
right.
their food, or taking care of their children. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep, yep.
And white men... could not stop them from going and pick those women up. So this is why in little over a year, the bus boycott was over. But it was a combination of complementary relationship between us as men find the women up. And the women, once they saw that and felt that energy, they took over. So we become the word, they the power. Now, let's take that all the way back to African societies. If you look up Google, look up traditional African matrilineal society. Okay? I'll say that again. Traditional African matrilineal society. And what you will see that we come from out of a matrilineal societies, the same way where women had the power. They chose the chief, not the men. The chief came from the mother's line, not the father's line. Okay?
Okay.
The inheritance came through the mother's line, not the father's line. So if you just look at the word, in Her-re-tence, H-E-R.
Okay.
All right?
In her, I get it.
You see what I'm saying? Which is very different
from a
patriarchal society, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that way, where we worked in a complementary relationship, we were able to develop great societies and have a lot of peace within those societies. And a lot of our institutions took care of doing things the right way and not based on might. So what happens is that everybody basically that we loved lived in the village. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Lived within walking distance. There was manhood training for the young men. They had to go through training to recognize what it is was to become a man in the society. And I think that when Roots first came out, Kunta Kinte, where they had to go to manhood training, there was a time in their lives where they got to a certain age that they went to manhood training. And what took place is it wasn't all the men who left the village, but there were certain ones that were designated to take the boys through the manhood training so they knew what they would have to do to become men and how they would have to handle themselves in order to become part of the village, which is where they wanted to be because that's where everybody they loved was there. So then they had to go through certain things in terms of respect for elders, how they were, what it would take for them to get married, you know. So all of these things we see in our culture. And what's taking place is that right now we have hardly any of these mechanisms set up for our young men to know what it is that they're supposed to do, because what they see a lot of us doing is chasing dollars. That's not bringing the happiness, right? But that's a lot of times that's what they're looking at, because those are examples that we're seeing.
You know, I've heard that part of the African thing is that if the woman is not, should be kept well, and if the woman is not well, then her child is not going to be well. And so this is why we need to protect the woman and what she does. And they're saying now, and this has been said for quite some time, that the black man has not been protecting this woman.
Our women are afraid to death for their black male son when they walk out the house. That has not changed since our enslavement. Is that right?
They are
afraid to death when their black male sons walk out the house, especially as they become teenagers. Because they understand what's the possible consequences. They've seen it too many times, have they not?
Yes. I guess, you know, that kind of brings me to the question when I kind of talked about, you mentioned, you said, you know, we're a loving people. But then when I think about, are people taking advantage of us because we're loving people, or just because they have the advantage with the white supremacy and so forth with this whole setup? But I guess what I want to get at is that
it seems like they want to take away
what we do in regards to fighting back. I mean, there are some things that you know, it's not intelligent to watch Malcolm X puts it that, you know, it's unintelligent to watch someone mishandle your woman, you know, and you do nothing. You know, if they do this, then you need to do that. And I understand what you're saying, King being a pacifist and so forth, but it seems like they encourage us to do the least bit and prey on things more so than to act on things, which is more what they do. And then we give them this forgiveness. And so is that like how we've been psychologically taught to just do things a certain way, because, you know, if doing it the other way, we just want to pray for, you know, when we get to heaven or something like that. I mean, they have the riches and the wealth of everything here and now. Why can't we have that? And being aggressive, is that the wrong thing to do, to say, hey, look, man, don't beat on me. Don't beat on my woman. I want this.
Well, what takes place is this, is that what I've learned over time, you know, we have to take into account how we see the world, how our ancestors have seen the world, and what we have to do in terms of focusing on bringing our community back together, okay? Because what I see is, and a lot of people seeing, right, where you have Make America Great Again. Well, what does that say? That means America's falling apart, ain't it?
Or has
fallen apart. So do we want to go ahead and try? We live in a patriarchal society where might makes right, not right makes right. Is that right?
Yeah. That's a very good way of putting it. Might make right, not right make right.
Right, because when we were coming up, the old people used to say two wrongs don't make a right. And what happened is, if you got into a situation, we come and tell them about what somebody else did, and the old folks would simply say, well, what did you do? So what happens, we got a different kind of insight. And then what takes place is things change over time, each generation, even though it looks like things are falling apart in our community, there's a lot of good things that's happening. But then all we have to do now is to address, go back to our culture and address what we need to do in terms of pulling our young people back together.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, most.
And
definitely.
There's all kinds of things they can do, but the first thing they want to do, like I say, they want to see us as happy. I mean, but look what's happening in the other communities as well. The drugs, the suicide.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All of the mental illness, it's affecting everybody. Ain't nobody. And when COVID came in, COVID leveled what they call level of playing field. Is that right?
Okay.
No matter what kind of money you have, what kind of business, whatever, it shut everything down, didn't it?
Right, right.
You couldn't go see the people that you love.
Right. And that's a toll on a lot of people psychologically as well.
A lot of times for the elders, you had to have drive-by birthday parties. And then people be standing out there, right?
Yeah.
Waving at them. Then, you know, you couldn't go to the hospital.
Right.
So
life
as people knew it. And this is why people were in such a funk, because with COVID, we found out what was really important. And so after COVID now, you still find people who say, damn, a job. They ain't going to do just anything for money no more.
Right.
White, black, whatever. Is that right?
Right. That is so big right now.
They throwing out bonuses, $5,000, $10,000 bonuses for you to come to the workplace. And people saying, I ain't doing that no more.
Right.
I ride a lot with Uber drivers and Lyft drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Who left them jobs and say they ain't never going back. They feel free.
And, you know, I've heard that so many times, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Baba Courtney, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to take our break, and then we'll come back and really I'd like to talk about more about this, because this pandemic has really changed the narrative and how we look at things and what we value as important, and has really brought that out there, you know. So
that's right.
All right. We'll be going to a break, and we'll be back shortly. Warriors Way, continuing the fight.
He's loud in the wilderness. He's loud and bitterness.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
OTEP family, we are back. This is your brother Kwasi Kraft. On Warriors Way, continuing the fight. This is a call-in format, so the lines are open for calls, questions, and comments. The call-in number is 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. We're blessed to have Baba Anthony Courtney, who's been educating people and just pouring into so many of us and still doing that. Appreciate this. And you know what? I'm going to do, because I know who Baba Anthony Courtney is and some of our listeners might not. Baba Courtney, could you just kind of give them a brief bio of yourself, some of the work that you've done?
Well, let's say that a lot of people talk about becoming awake, becoming conscious, right?
Yeah.
And what takes place is that oftentimes, you know, my consciousness really came when I was in college. When I went to college, before I went to college, I knew what prejudice was. I knew what discrimination was. But I didn't know what racism was. And so when I went to college, I was a three-sport athlete in high school. I played football, basketball, and baseball. And when I went to college, I wound up going to a college in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Cole College. There were only like four black students on the campus at the time out of about 900 to 1,000 students. And during that time in 1964, they had recruited a lot of black people all over the country to go to college. Okay? So when I went to college, the movement was civil rights.
Right.
Dr. King was the pusher. But midway through my college, in 66, it became Black Power. Mm. And what gave me a different way of looking at the world is one of the brothers that was from Chicago and another one that was from St. Louis that played on the basketball team, they had begun to become conscious, and they had me come into the room to listen to this album.
Mm.
And the album was Malcolm X, Message to the Grassroots. And Malcolm
yeah.
had gotten killed in 1965. But what happened is when I started listening to it, it started making to me to reflect on the things that my family had gone through that I hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to because I didn't know the dynamics. I had three other brothers and sisters, okay?
Mm.
We never lived together at any time. I never remember as a child living with my mother or my father because
wow.
we lived with different aunts and uncles. So a lot of brothers
mm-hmm.
talk about, well, I didn't never remember living with their father. But I never remember living with my mother and my father. I
wow.
lived with my aunt, one of my aunts, what I call Mama Sarah. I was probably
mm-hmm.
3 or 4 years at the time. I probably did live with my mother and father, but I don't remember. I had to be less than 3.
Right.
So I lived with my aunt till I was 8. Then I moved upstairs to live with my great-grandmother and another aunt and one of my brothers. And then I had another brother that lived all the way at the end of the hall on the other side of the bathroom that lived with his father's people. I had an older sister that she didn't even know she was my sister till I told her, and I found out after my mother came home from the penitentiary. And she told me that that was not my cousin, that was my sister. And, like, you know, that created a fur, because once I found out, I was like, what? And she didn't know either.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So my siblings, the four of us never lived together at any time. Okay? Then also, and I'm just giving you background that made
right.
me open my eyes up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was with my mother, who was a brilliant woman, tops of a high school class in Chicago at Lucy Flowers High School, that wanted to be a maritime lawyer, one that dealt with the laws of the sea, right? She was
yeah.
told, just like Malcolm X was told in the movie about he wanted to be a lawyer, she was told
right.
that she needed to be more realistic and think about becoming a domestic. And my mother was not going to become a domestic because that's what my grandmother was. And she was not going to accept that. So then she went off into a life of crime, all kinds of things. All right? So that was a large
wow.
part of our motivation for me and one of my brother who lived together upstairs when I moved upstairs. And so I remember at about 9 or 10 years old, we would have to take these long trips, maybe once every 2 or 3 months if we could afford it, to go see my mother in the penitentiary. And then there was always tears and anger when we left. So what took place? So we got back in them days, that was the cowboy movies that was on. So
right.
I wrote a letter to my mother that said that when me and my brother get some guns and horses, we go come down there and break you out the penitentiary. The letter
like
got all the way to the warden. The warden came over to see my mother. All right? And he was laughing, and the letter got all around the penitentiary, the other workers and stuff. The warden came over to see my mother and said, you know what? We're going to have to watch out for your boy. And little did he know, he wasn't lying. Because what happened is when the Black Power movement came along, we jumped dead in it. in terms of, because we had heard Malcolm X and heard by that time, heard a lot of other folks. In 1967, a group of us on the campus, black students, we took over our administration building and placed our demands on the college. This is one of the things that took a lot of them, because a lot of that was going on in 67, 68. The other motivating force is that in just before I graduated in 68, they killed Dr. King in April. They killed Bobby Kennedy in June. They beat up the people at the Democratic National Convention. So now I was already had become a political animal, even though I was still playing sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what takes place is as I begin to look at, like I say, I began to understand what racism was, then that was what began my driving force to go ahead and fix our community and also fix the things that are wrong in America where I'm living. And I ain't never looked back. And that's been, let's see, over 55 years.
Wow.
When
you look at what's going on today with, you know, all this violence, and I'm kind of thinking about, you know, we talked about, you know, manhood training, and last week, Dr. Fuller was on, Howard Fuller was on Doc Rogers' show, and he talked about, you know, the community schools that was brought up, you know, doing that on the weekends. And sometimes you don't. And so I'm thinking about you living with different relatives and, you know, but you guys were basically in the same house, but you had different relatives and stuff that took care of you. And so when I'm thinking about, you know, when we talk about these community schools, you know, and where we have the privacy, that's the good part of it, where we can teach what we need to teach, because we would do that, say, on the weekends. I think he said Saturday schools. And that was something that I think they were trying to do, and I don't know if they did do it, and it was just for a short period of time. It didn't last. But, you know, how we can, you know, train our black young men and to understanding, you know, because, like, you got different people with a different narrative that's teaching us how we need to be. And we have so many people that are confused. And, like, you know, so I'm looking at the struggle that you went in, and in everything that you said you heard Malcolm talk and, you know, understanding what racism is and going through the things you went through and stuff like that. It takes something in you. Like you said, you got woke up. In regards to making the move that you make. But right now, we got people just attacking each other. You know, it seems like it's a different mindset, you know, and what's causing that different mindset, you know, is it the de-education that we're getting? I mean, because we're not learning a lot about who we really are, where we come from. So we've kind of assimilated into, the U.S., the way, you know, they do things here. But it doesn't reflect who we are, because we didn't come here with our language, with our religion, with a lot of our spirituality. I mean, that was forced fed on us. And so I'm looking at that as being part of the main problem, you know, to say the least.
And it is, but see, each group, each ethnic group is responsible for the education of their own offspring, their children. Chinese, they go educate Chinese children.
Right,
the Chinese
children
go educate Italian children. You know, Korean, Polish, German, French, Swede, Irish, they go educate their children. And then what takes place is show them how they navigate and fit into the overall scheme of things. You see what I'm saying? And what they should be doing to uplift their own communities and keep them. See, when I first went off to college, you know, my at the time, nobody would have bet on me based on my how my family did. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But even in the educational process, my brother, my IQ was 129. My brother
wow.
was 164. And Ooh. both of us, as we began to, as we gone through certain things, we had been touted to go to these all-white college, I mean,
okay.
high school. But then they found out we was black, and then they decided not to do it. But they had sent letters and everything.
Mm.
All right? Yeah, this, and we were
wow.
living in Chicago, all right? And so then they found out I was black, and that was okay, fine. We didn't care because back then,
right.
you know, the love was in our community, and we was glad to be around our own people. And wasn't no government
right.
stop us from learning, no way, because we
mm-hmm.
had been taught at home early.
Right.
You know. So these are things that – so what is happening now is that when we talk about, you know, the men and women in our community – has to begin to recognize the that we have a complementary relationship, not an adversarial or competitive relationship.
Right.
And what happened is too many of us are buying into that. Yeah, there's been a lot of hurt. There's been a lot of pain for both black men and black women. And a lot of people don't know how to fix it. But, you know, the thing is sometimes you – what you really got to do all the time is you got to go inside and tap into that God spirit within you. See, we try to do everything mentally and physically, but oftentimes
yes.
we leave out the God aspect of how things should be done. See, the spirit, what it does, it brings the people into our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. Some people came in my life just one time, and I don't know if I ever saw them again or not, but they gave me something that I needed at that time,
mm-hmm.
okay? Others came in for a while. They stayed for a while, and then they went, and then, like, a lot of times we lost track. We moved to different cities and whatever, and so they were there for a season, you know? And then there's others that come for a lifetime. Family and friends has been there forever. But the spirit determines
right.
that. We don't determine who comes in our life. And situations change. They don't become stagnant. So we see a lot of other things that are taking place in terms of people searching. And not just us, but people all based on what happened with COVID. People are searching for that happiness now.
Mm-hmm.
To change their lives. And so the market is, we are the ones, because we are the oldest of the people on the planet, is we have to focus on the happiness market. All right, real happiness, not just fun. Like
mm-hmm.
I say, it's like one of the things that I've come to the conclusion of is we will never be known by the amount of money we accumulate. We will have to be known and set a standard about the amount of money we give away. Because you can't out money the people who print money, can you?
Right, right.
They print money and burn money every day, don't they?
Right, yeah, most definitely. I've seen it, yeah.
Right. Right, and even if you accumulate, then what happens, depending on how you get your money, you're always afraid that you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So how much stress do people feel when they trying to live a lifestyle or trying to have allowed that acquisition of materialism is their introduction to importance in the world? I'm important because I got these things.
Right.
I got to have something. You see what I'm saying? And yes, you want things, but everybody wants certain things, but you can't, people hold their happiness hostage. They say things like, well, you know, when I get this money, I'll be happy. Well, what happens if you don't ever get
right.
it?
Mm-hmm.
When I get this man or woman, I'll be so happy. Well, what if you don't get it? Or what happens when you lose it? When I have this baby, I'll be so happy. Well, what if you never have a baby?
Right.
So we hold our things, a lot of our happiness, hostage to things that we may or may not have. Be happy
right.
that we got a life. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Be happy that you got a life. Because we do different things. Everybody don't do the same thing. We ain't got to do the same thing. When I look at the villages in traditional African societies, I didn't see no money.
Okay.
Now, they may
right,
have had another
right.
form of economics, but I didn't see no money.
Mm-hmm.
But what I
right.
recognize, especially in black people, that I've seen is status to us means more than money.
Right.
So in the village, what took place was, well, you know, I'm the medicine man. I'm the herd. I'm the spiritual leader. I'm the hunter.
Right.
I'm the drummer. I'm the whatever. You see what I'm saying? And we took pride
yeah.
in what we have accomplished in terms of our God-given talents and how it worked in the benefit of the whole. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And we had a different view of the world. Our view of the world is, I am because we are.
Yeah.
Not get mine. Don't worry about it. Nobody else. Long
yeah.
as I get mine, that's it. And so
mm-hmm.
is that what we see a lot of our young people doing now?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, this is just such a competitive nature, and this is just the way this country was always developed. By taking from other, you know, powerful
mm-hmm.
people versus, you know, well, power, money, you know, to rule and so forth. But you have other people that are giving and, you know, and helpful and, you know, and just want to share and live together. But
that's right.
That's just not the way the United States. We talk that way after we've taken and beaten and put so much fear into people, and then now we want to live with you after we've used
well,
you up.
Well,
to
you
a
know
certain
the thing.
Degree.
You know the thing about fear. There's consequences
yes.
to whatever you do. There's the consequences
okay.
when you recognize truth. There's a consequence to maybe you speaking that truth. You may not get the job. You may not get a position.
Right.
But there's also consequences for not speaking the truth. Because now you got to live with yourself.
Right.
And when you don't speak the truth in terms of situations, then you become oftentimes what I call the walking dead. And
yeah.
what people do to the walking dead, you see it on TV, they bust them in the head, try to cut off their heads with a sword, shoot them with a shotgun, you see. And so at some point,
right.
and what we see that's happening now, like I said, COVID leveled that playing field, is that a lot of people now are speaking their truth and recognize
right.
that a lot of where they've been pitted against each other, they're not going to allow that. You see a lot
right.
of youth, they live in abandoned houses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they live in there in groups. They might go out and sell a little weed, but a lot of them, their families that become other youth, live in these places.
Mm-hmm.
So they're developing some whole different concepts of family, not just blood
yeah.
family, but, you know, other friends and stuff.
Right.
Because
and, you know, I've seen that with a lot of the families when I would go to some of these different schools, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of these kids, they would just matter of fact, Dr. Fuller was talking about that. He was saying, like, a lot of these kids, which, since the COVID hit and so forth, and now a lot of these kids become the financial supporters for the family. So they're not even going to school like they need to go to school. It's about survival. And
that's
so
right.
A lot of things have changed. And then a lot of these kids, you know, I can't make it by myself, but me and you both got this job, and me and my other friends, and all of a sudden we got a house full of young kids that have jobs, and, you know, but this is, they can keep the rent or
mm-hmm.
keep a roof over their head. You know, so it's changed things in a lot of different ways, you know, like I said, it comes down to survival, you know.
Right.
Well, we know, need that education.
Yeah. You know, when I was teaching high school, and we was having a discussion about drugs. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
And it got real noisy. It was only about 1 minute, and I'm walking down these stairs.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, and I will talk to some of these young fellas, and, you know, that a lot of them came from these poverty conditions. And one day he was talking
okay.
about drugs, and one of the young men said, well, Mr. Courtney, if I don't sell these drugs, somebody go do it. And I say, son,
right.
you're correct, and I understand. I said, but you ain't got to do it. Somebody is go do it. But you got to have to make the decision of whether or not you go do it. And I understand his circumstances. You know, he was bringing money in the house. But eventually, you can't sell drugs and people not know it. And it's just usually
right.
a matter of time for somebody to tell on you and want your spot. Or when
right.
the drugs begin to dry up. And you've been used to a dollar lifestyle, and now you got to go to 75 cents. And then a lot of other sellers are out there selling drugs with the dollar lifestyle, and they got to go to 75 cents. Well, they ain't used to living off that 75 cents. So they start telling on each other. A lot of times,
right.
the next people that's using the drugs that's telling on them is the ones that's in the competition.
Right.
And then a lot of the other drama began to take place, like the shootings and stuff, see? So
yeah.
it's all about now what we do to educate especially our young men and our old men as well. So that's what we have to look at. Our young men are going to be warriors one kind or another. They will be the kind of warriors that will either enhance and protect and help the village grow properly, or they will be the ones that will burn it down.
Right, right. You know, we're trying to get people to flip the switch. And, you know, I guess my big problem when I look at a lot of things is that you're asking, well, I'll put it this way. I believe a lot of people that don't look like us, and people that are like that do look like us are asking our oppressors for the solution, and they're the ones that put us in these situations, and we're asking them for their answers, and we kind of co-sign with them as long as they maybe do a little bit for us, and but it, you know, the overall it hurts them. Go ahead.
Well, what I see, brother, is that I think it's like what Dr. King said a long time ago. We will have to fix America. America can't fix it.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, the more, the older I get, the more I begin to look at what he was saying. You know, they cannot fix themselves.
Right.
You know, they're not happy. You know. Ask their youth whether or not they're happy. Because every day when I'm looking at the TV, I'm not hearing or seeing the happiness. You know, I'm not seeing it.
Right.
And I'm hearing it continuously. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, you know, I can say, and when you made that comment about name five black happy families. And I can think of some, but you know, but I don't have a lot of high numbers. I don't, you know, and that was just troubling to think. I could just, you know, I could just think of my relatives people that I talk to on a regular basis. But at the same time, I also know for some of the people that are just you know, in this fight, in this struggle, that, you know, his life is just so difficult and it's tough for them. And they're walking on the edges all the time.
Yeah. You know what's happening also, Brother Harsh? Now, you know, being in Milwaukee, I know a lot of brothers and sisters who that are married, have been together 20, 25, 30 years and getting divorced.
Yes.
Now, what the hell? What's happening? I mean, where do you think you're going? Or is it so bad?
Yes.
You know? And so the youth is looking at that.
Mm,
you know,
yeah.
They look at all of these people who getting divorced, and they come to the conclusion, well, hell, I don't think I'm going to get married. You know?
Well, you know, there's so much that's going on that they're seeing, you know, with that they're making it seem like it's so normal, you know. And when I say that, I'm talking about, you know, where you have, like a RuPaul, that's a famous person. You're sensationalizing this person. You got TV reality shows, and these people are making hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars. And you got, you know, people with so many different identity crises. And all of that stuff was to break down the family. Because when you got people in your family that don't know who they are, can't identify what they want to be and so forth, and, I mean, it just seems so different because we have this social media platform that's bombarding us, and then we have the political correctness in regards to how we need to address things, and that's being enforced, you know, in different aspects of the society. So you, as a parent, it's like, hey, you can't talk to your kid like this, you know? it's very awkward, and when you're trying to, you know, raise a family now, and so you have these so-called society issues and stuff. I mean, just all these different changes. Like now we have bathrooms. You go into stores, you know, instead of saying male, female, now it just says gender. And, I bring up the fact when I was working security at one of the stores, and they said, even when they had men and women, and this was several years ago, they said, if a man decides he wants to go in the girls' bathroom, we can't tell them not to, or vice versa, because we don't know what their mindset is. If they feel today I want to be, I feel like I'm a woman, that doesn't mean I need to look like a woman. That's just how I feel, and that would be discriminated against that person. And so they're more concerned with discriminating against a person because of how they might feel and violating their rights versus, you know, it is this political so-called correctness. I think a lot of people are taking advantage of those situations and scenarios, and it's confusing when you're trying to bring people up a certain kind of way, right from wrong, and, you know, and just addressing that. And that's why I kind of brought in masculinity, because they're saying, like, you know, like the way they define it, you know, like it's being something bad. But that's what we are naturally, I think. Am I wrong?
Well, see, the thing is, it's about how you define your masculinity.
Right.
You know, some people, based in this society, they play a lot of games are played with masculinity. There are certain things that certain kind of men are compared to each other, alpha male, beta male, whatever,
right,
put a label on it. And so if you ain't that, then there are certain benefits that you won't get, and what it does, it creates a competition. But everybody don't want to necessarily deal with the same thing. You could be an alpha male and uncaring about anybody else,
right?
Just because
right,
you
right,
have to try to get yours. You know, you could be a beta male and still trying to whatever. You know, so the thing is, we have all kind of different people. Ain't no one size fit all. And what happened is society, especially its youth, is rebelling against the existing status quo. And this is why this Roe versus Wade thing got leaked, is that a lot of these groups know that they're going to be next in terms of things being taken away, certain rights.
Right.
And so if they do the Roe versus Wade thing, then the LGBT, they can look for it next. Then the transgender,
yeah.
transgender groups, they can look for it, you know, whatever next.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the thing is, you know, where people have developed a different kind of mindset, I don't think they're going to be able to turn it back. They can turn back the laws, but if they do the abortion thing, then women will start going back to the back alleys.
Right, right, right. That was one of the things that I heard in some conversations on social media where they said that, you know, now it's going to be a health risk and so forth, that, like you said, they'll go through these back alleys and try and get it done. But they also indicated that, you know, on some end, they'll just have to go to different states and have it done. Because
right.
some states
if that's
what
we're
going
to
do.
Right, but those
right,
that ain't
right.
got the money or whatever to go. And I mean, it's all
right.
happening. It ain't never not stopped. You know what I'm saying? It's just that, but you
right.
rather have a thing where the woman's health, you know, now with her decision, she has to live with her decision, whatever she decides to do, you know, because it's her body. So, you know, you have to you do what. But you got to always deal with what you, because it don't go out of your memory. But in certain occasions,
right.
yeah, that hasn't happened because it could have caused a tragic death. So, you know, like I say, we are the ones that's going to have to help fix America. There's no doubt about
yeah.
it.
Well, you know, when we talked about COVID and how that kind of woke some people up, and at the same
mm-hmm.
time, you know, when I think about that, you know, I mean, it might have woke some people up, but at the same time, you know, all of this has been going on, you know, so where have some of these people been? You know, but I'm glad, so at some point, I'm glad that COVID came in regards to if that's what it took to wake some people up. I'm saying in regards to some of the people that lost their lives through
mm-hmm.
dealing with the pandemic, but, you know, we are in a crisis in regards to knowing who we are and trying to address what we need to do and try to focus
okay.
on what needs to be done.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
it's just, but you know, like you said, it has changed the platform so much. I mean, because people are starting to understand what's more important, family.
Right. That's right.
You know, and I don't have to. You know what? I'm not going to make this money. I'm not going to do this. I can make it some other way. I'll have to do without. But it's more important for me to be here for my family and so forth versus putting myself out at risk. And like you said, they were offering all these bonuses. And all that stuff is still going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I see, you know, what you're saying because, you know, I work these different type of jobs. And they're doing a lot trying to get people to come out there and do stuff because they're just so up and down in regards to how we need to deal with it. Like right now they're talking like this pandemic is over and now it's picking up steam, so to speak. And so
That's
you
right.
have your naysayers and so forth. So, you know, we're just in a different place right now. But this is nothing new.
Yes. Well, like I say, the driving force in everybody's life is people are looking for real, true happiness now.
Yes.
That's it. And it ain't for sale.
Right. Right.
You know,
and those deaths has really brought that to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because a lot of people are being stressed out and having heart attacks and all kind of things. But at the same time, while the negative stuff is taking place and going on, there's a lot of positive things
yes.
out there. So what we have to do now is highlight the positive and take every opportunity we can to, when people are constantly pushing the negative, give them a different way of looking at things. You know, attack
right.
the negative. Don't be just silent, because a lot of times silent is consent. You see, you don't say
yeah.
nothing, especially when you know better.
you know.
Right, right.
And
right.
And you ain't got to try to fight every battle. You just fight some battles. You know what I'm saying? And everybody fight a little bit. The little saying within African society is that the ants will eat the elephant. You know, when they're together. And in villages, when ants begin to march, they march miles wide and long, and whole villages get up and move.
Right.
That's right. They show documentaries on TV. So that's what the togetherness is all about, and the unity, and not judging people. See, that's the key. Because there's a little saying called Jinyame that comes out of Ghana. I see what you're doing. I don't know why you're doing it. Only God knows, so I ain't going to judge. Because I ain't no mind reader.
Right.
And ain't none of us out here no mind readers.
Yes, a lot of us thinking that we are, though, that's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that is interesting. What was that word again?
Jinyame.
Jinyame?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, Jinyame. You can look it up. It's G-Y-E-A-M-E. Yeah, you can look it up. I don't know if I got the spelling all the way, but I wear a little ring a reminder all the time. Me and my wife, we wear these rings called Jinyame, whereas we see what we're doing, we see what people doing, but we ain't judging. You know, that's like what she always says, when you point one finger at somebody else, it's three pointing back at you.
I was listening to one of Malcolm X's speeches, and he was talking about, you know, coming together and how much stronger we'll be. And this was a speech, I think, he did in 1962. And it was on who taught you to hate yourself? And he put his fingers up. He put his hands up and spread his fingers apart. And he talked about how weak his fingers are individually, but when he brought his fingers together and he clenched his hands to a fist, and he told how much more power that. And so I like the way he put that together in thought, you know, as far as coming together. You know, and then we have different uses for our hands when they're together and when they're a fist and so forth. So like I said, he made that plain and simple, and we just need to keep things simple and think about it on those terms.
That's right. Yeah, it ain't all that complicated.
No.
You know, we have to pass wisdom from the elders all the way down to the babies. Yeah, we have to establish our downline that has a way we look at the world, just like the Jewish people, they have a way that they look at the world. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they continuously promote it. There's a way that the Chinese look at the world. There's a way that the Italians look at the world. All of these groups, there's a way that they look at the world, and they recognize what they do is they in the world and they compete for the resources that exist in the world so they can take care of their own people. And that's what we have to do. But our greatest resource is our own people. And the key becomes is we have to stay away from the judgment, and we have to watch the words that come out of our mouth. There's a little saying that there's a saying that goes, if your tongue turns into a knife, it will cut off your lips. Because a lot of times we wind up saying things that we shouldn't be saying, and a lot of times we can't take it back. So in our community, what takes place is this. Growing up as a young man and all the way up until my elder years, I have heard a statement that said, especially in reference to black men, that says, niggas ain't shit. And usually that statement was being said by our women. All right? Now you don't hear a lot of that no more, but you hear some of the same type of language that says, well, he's a deadbeat dad, or he don't want to take care of his family. He could get a job if he wanted to. Now, that's saying basically the same thing in this time.
But what happens is we don't know the circumstances that take place in people's lives, why they can't do what they may want to do for their family. What makes us think that men don't want to do for their families? Some may not, based on what prior relationship that they had. You know what I'm saying? That may not have turned out right, but in many, most cases, they probably wanted to, but maybe they can't. Maybe just like what happened in Milwaukee in the 80s when Slips moved and NAFTA came in and the factories shut down, and then a lot of the plants that people had worked on for 20, 25 years, making livable wages to take care of their families, the plants got moved and got cheaper than foreign market labor from Hong Kong, Taiwan, Dominican Republic, Mexico, you see. Those were the people at the top, because why? They could cut the wages and make more and more money.
Right.
You know? So what happened to a lot of those men who maybe married their childhood sweethearts and raised children, and now they were no longer able to provide, using the definition that other people was using in terms of being able to take care of their families. So what happened? A lot of them turned to what? Drugs, alcohol, abuse, all kind of things went on, and it's just been constantly spiraling. See what I'm saying? So we can't be judging nobody. You know, we have to begin to, like I say, change our language in terms of the community. Because if we don't change the language, the competitive nature of men, if we allow certain things that exist, like he don't want to take care of his family, he's a deadbeat dad, then you can't talk about that brother with that brother about unity in the next breath. Because the language that we have not addressed or have used ourselves make him look bad in front of his women and children. And when you make a man look bad in front of his women and children, he don't want to hear nothing you got to say in life.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. I mean, I've seen that happen many a times. And, you know, like I said, when I was old enough to address those issues, that's what I did. When I was young enough and just witnessed it, I saw how it made me feel just hearing somebody else being torn down.
That's right.
And then seeing the reaction from that. I mean, it was trauma for me. You know, and I didn't want anybody else to experience that. Fortunately, I've never had anyone confront me in that manner. But at the same time, I wisely listen to people that have poured into me so much, and so I've been very blessed. You know, so
yes.
I don't take that for granted at all.
All right.
Well, we're coming to near the end of the program for tonight, and I was just wondering if you have any closing thoughts or some things that you might want to touch on in regards to just so much that's going on. You know, we don't seem to have a lot of control on what's going on in the school, or even actually what happens on the street. And having these relationships and building these bonds with the family, and I guess what I see, and one of the reasons I wanted to have this program tonight, talking about, you know, the raping of the black man's masculinity, I think that that's being done in so many different ways, you know, where they're just taking things from us, things that we feel that we're good at, and makes us strong and so forth, and now they're redefining those things, and you shouldn't be this way. You need to look at things in a different way, and that's not common for a lot of us. But like I said, they're coming up with these different terminologies and blaming you for being a strong person, saying you're homophobic or something to that effect. And I said, you know, so how do you talk to your young people today? How do you talk to anybody in general and stuff like that, that may be going through some of these issues in regards to just knowing themselves?
Well, the key becomes all about uplifting. You know, a lot of times you want to have a listener. Sometimes they don't want you to say nothing. They just want to have where you they you can listen to what they got to say, or certain things they right. have to need to get off their chest. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And then in terms of leadership, once you've taken on the mantle, and leadership comes in a lot of different ways. But once you take it on the mantle of having taken a position about what you're trying to do for the community and you live it, people recognize it. But it takes a long time. And you can't right. have a soft underbelly because all kind of things going to be said about mm. you. People will accuse you of all kind of things. But that's the role that you're supposed to play. Because what takes place right. a lot of times, folks want to give up. I remember I was sitting there talking to Mickey Black one day, and a brother I've been knowing for over 30-something years. And I was selling the books and, you know, doing things that I've been doing for all these years. And he came through. He said, Courtney, you still at it? I said, man, did we win? I mean, what else I'm going to do? If I was going to quit, I should have been that over 50 years ago. And there's a yeah. lot of brothers and sisters in Milwaukee, brothers that we know that have not given up. You know, yeah, they right. get stressed out. But what else they going to do? If you know once you know the truth, you can't not yeah. know it. You right. don't have to do nothing. You don't have to do nothing about it. Now, that's your choice. But you can't never not know it. And the thing is, I'll leave you with the last comment. That where Malcolm X, who opened my eyes in terms of certain things, was don't blame the blind for being blind. Lead them across the street.
Wow.
So if you know more, then you got to do more. The saying goes where much is given, you know, much is expected. See? And that's with any of us, you know, men and women, where we know more.
Don't blame the blind.
Don't blame the blind for being blind. Lead them across the street.
Okay. All right.
See, and what we have to do, especially brothers who have been out here involved in movement and trying to make some positive change, we have to uplift each other. We ain't all necessarily got the same philosophy. But you know, if when we're trying, a brother's trying to do something good for the community, we don't have to criticize and try to act like our philosophy is better than his philosophy or our religion is better than his religion. Malcolm used to say, keep your religion at home between you and your God. So we need to come together. And when we talk about coming together in unity, we ain't just coming together to meet everybody. We come together to come with some resolution of how we go address the conditions that exist in our community and recognize that everybody has a role, everybody has a lane, and everybody has a sphere of influence of people that they can influence that we can't. So that's what we have to do now and put that together. It's all about a puzzle.
Yeah.
We all in it.
Yeah.
We just may be in different parts of it. But what affects one of us in the puzzle affects others in the puzzle.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautifully put. Well, Bubba Courtney, I thank you. I thank you for answering the call and coming and sharing and pouring into us. And it's just so appreciated. And I just learned so much just hearing from you. And just thank you. This was a wonderful opportunity for me just to have this conversation with you. And you know, and our listeners, I'm sure they're, you know, going to love what's being said and give us some energy and some encouragement in regards to what we need to do and what we shouldn't do. So I thank you again.
And I want to thank you for having me. I appreciate that, you know.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, you were listening to Warrior's Way, continuing the fight, the raping of the black man's masculinity. We had Baba Anthony Courtney on with us as our special guest, and he poured so much knowledge into us. So we thank you again for listening. We'll be back next Thursday on Warrior's Way, continuing to fight on 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday. That's Warrior's Way, continuing to fight. So long. Hotel family.
when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against death, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots